Okay, our Bible reading today is Ezekiel chapter 37. No. Chapter 37, Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 1 to 10. The hand of the Lord was on me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord, and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry. He asked me, "Son of man, can these bones live?" I said, "Sovereign Lord, you alone know." Then he said to me, "Prophesy to these bones and say to them, 'Dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the Sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord.' So I prophesied as I was commanded. And as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound, and the bones came together, bone to bone. I looked, and tendons and flesh appeared on them, and skin covered them, but there was no breath in them. Then he said to me, 'Prophesy to the breath, prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, come breath from the four winds and breathe into these slain that they may live.' So I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them, and they came to life and stood up on their feet, a vast army."
Okay, I think you've all understood that the subliminal message about bones is that after Christmas, it's time for a diet or something like that, but you know. Okay, all right. Do you want to go and sit down? Okay, I'll just get my thing sorted. Okay, yep, I'll be all right. Okay, we should have a few pictures coming up on the screen, and by now all of you have understood what the theme is. We are talking about bones, dry bones in the valley. Computer just got wrong, and there's just a word that just got in, and that shouldn't be there. But we're going to look at Ezekiel, the prophet Ezekiel, because somehow, the vision that we've been using all through this morning, this piece of poetry. Well, it requires a lot of imagination. So we've tried to illustrate it in different ways, and it's not finished. We'll have more illustration, because this is old writings. Ezekiel is a fairly old book. It's something like 2,500 years old. Really, the prophecy of Ezekiel, that text itself, is a bit of dry bones, and it needs to be brought back to life. And that's what we're doing this morning. In 587 BC, that's a long time ago, Jerusalem was crushed. It was taken over. Babylonians took a lot of the people who lived there and took them a long way away. You've got a fantastic map there. And that's a bit of a walk from where the arrow starts to where the arrow is pointing, to that huge big circle. In the middle of that, you've got Babylon. It's just outside modern Baghdad. And then quite a lot about ruins. I spent quite a lot of time in Syria myself, digging as an archaeologist, and finding out all bits and pieces. It's quite interesting. Old bones, I remember bringing them from Syria, and they were about that old, 2,500 years old, and because they were in a box, and Sally, my wife, didn't know what they were, I think they just went in a bin, because you know, they were just pointless. What happened? Judah lost a big war. They had a big war that was involving Egypt in the south, and basically they chose the wrong ally and lost that huge big war. Ezekiel is taken captive. He is now a slave. Like any other person from Judah, he has been taken captive into Babylon. Well, not everyone, just the clever ones, just the elite of the country, so that they wouldn't be able to rebuild their country. Dealing with victory. Well, the text, the prophecy of Ezekiel is not talking about victory. Victory is something that we all like. It's something that is pleasant. It is uplifting. It is not dealing with victory. It is dealing with defeat. A huge feeling of being destroyed and crushed. Ezekiel is speaking from a complete situation of catastrophe. The whole country is wiped off. They are, most of them, captive in Babylon. Those who have remained in Judah are pretty much living in horrible conditions. They're scattered and dispersed. All across the Middle East, those who could find a refuge were finding their life completely changed. Refugees. On the map, you can see that sort of arc going all across that arrow. That's where that people from Judah is now scattered all over the place, from Jerusalem to Babylon. The temple in Jerusalem has been taken over by stronger gods, hasn't it? A stronger god than the God of Israel. That's what it looks like. Sin, Shamash, Marduk, Ishtar, and many others have won. That's what it looks like, doesn't it? Sacrifices to Marduk is the main Babylonian god. Sacrifices to Ishtar are being offered in Jerusalem on the same altar. It is total humiliation. It is complete annihilation for the people of Judah. Ezekiel himself is a priest. He is a priest and now has no temple. That was his purpose in life. That was his job. That was what he was meant to be doing. There is no temple where he could serve. That was the job of his father, his grandfather. The whole purpose of his family is gone. When they get to Babylon, Judah, the people of Judah, discover a much brighter civilization. And you should have a few illustrations, very modern illustrations, of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Imagine these people coming from Jerusalem, they get to a proper city, a proper state, properly organized. Just like the Anglo-Saxons when they saw the Normans coming. Oh, that's what civilization looks like. It's a fact. Now, before the vision of the dry bones, we have a very interesting prophecy itself. Just before this vision of dry bones, things that are completely dead, lifeless. This is what we read. For I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. Gathering from the nations. That's what it says. Very interestingly, the place where Ezekiel was staying was called Tel Aviv, which is the very name that those who re-established a state of Israel many, many years later chose for their first city, Tel Aviv. Cleansing from impurities and idols. Cleansing. New heart, new spirit, hearts of stone, changed for hearts of flesh. this is a prophetic vision in a situation that seems totally hopeless. Can these bones live? This is the question that God is asking to Ezekiel in the vision. Well, maybe we could act that out. Ezekiel's answer is, I don't know. Can these bones live? Ask God. I don't know. You know. You're God. Well, that could be a modern dramatization of the answer, but I don't think it is quite the answer that Ezekiel is giving. The bones will only live if they make the prophetic vision theirs. Life will depend on the response from the scattered people of Judah much more than a magical act of God. This is what it is all about. Not being cleansed, but accepting the cleansing and working on it. They are a mass of bones, lifeless and dry. It is a mass. No identity, nothing to mark them, to give them anything to say, oh, this one is that one. And no, there's no identity, it's just a mass. I saw a great many bones. Let's be very precise. The vision itself, the text that we have in Ezekiel, is not mentioning any skeletons. And that's, I think, to me, very important. They are just a mass of bones with no function, no rules. It is just a big mass, lifeless mass. People who are shapeless and purposeless. As they start coming together, they also find their own purpose and shape. I think that's the power of this vision. Shapeless and lifeless. As you come together, you are acquiring, getting your own shape and purpose. They only get their individuality as they form part of the people of God. Brokenness of complete defeat and annihilation. This is what the vision given to Ezekiel is dealing with. The vision was first given to a totally defeated and exiled bunch of people. They are in exile, far away from where they are meant to be. It is in this situation of total collapse that Ezekiel shares the vision of dead, dry bones coming together to form new individuals, a new people, and a new army. Is this vision hopeless? No. The vision is showing that what you see that has no hope is actually a situation in which you can see this hope. What makes us live? This is what the Sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you, and make flesh come upon you, and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you, and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Now, prophecy is not about predictions. It's not about predictions. It's about seeing reality in a renewed way. The prophets of the Bible, Ezekiel, Isaiah, for example, are not necessarily making predictions. No, they are renewing a vision. This is what it looks like. This is the way you need to look at it. Not, I predict what will happen. It's true of a book like Revelation. It's true of a book like Ezekiel. As prophecy, they look at the past as much as the future. The prophecy is about looking back so that you can actually make sense of what has happened and now look into the future. Prophecy, I'd say, is about getting renewed vision first and foremost. These bones have never been truly alive. That is the message that Ezekiel receives and gives back to his fellow Judeans. were they really alive before when they had their own state? Were you really making the best of life at that time? No, not really. Were you alive when you had the security of your own state? When you had your own army, your own trained army, were you really alive back then? The only real temple where the only real God was to be worshipped, was that giving you all your confidence? Were you doing everything right? Or were you just expecting that because we had that temple, we would be all right? They could read Genesis in an interesting way. Because sin, with a little hat on the eye, is the god moon. Shamash is the god sun. Babylonians were worshipping the sun and the moon. Well, people from Judah, in the first book that they had in Genesis, they could read that these were not gods. They were just creation, just creatures of the one true God. They knew something, really, that the Babylonians didn't know. They were unidentified bones. And these unidentified bones can find the function. They can become shins, clavicles, radius, femur. I'm not too good at anatomy, so I'm going to stop there. From this human experience of defeat and annihilation, Judah can start pulling together. They can regroup. They can get organically alive. They will find their identity as they pull together. They will turn into individuals with personality. This is what the vision brings to those who are living in derelict conditions. Ezekiel, a book that is 25 centuries old, is about bringing life back through imagination, through a vision, through a renewed vision. What can leave dreams and fantasies of power and victory behind? You can leave all that behind. You can lay aside the desire for strength and power and kingdoms and empires. You can get really inspired by the prophetic vision. Come together as an army that once was defeated and powerless. Now, we all know that the best football coaches are not the football coaches that win titles. If you have the best players, you expect them to do something good with that. As a teacher, I am a teacher, I know that the very good students will do good, whatever I do. The best coaches, football coaches, are those that fight the relegation zone, those who are at the bottom, those who coach a team that is used to lose. That takes a real coaching skills. The vision is about the capacity to turn defeat into a new beginning. A prophetic vision that explains the reality of defeat and disaster. Now you can look back. Were you really alive at that time? The prophetic vision gives a new way to look at the exile in Babylon. And this exile is a new beginning. It's a new starting point. It was true 25 centuries ago for Judah, and it is true for any people in the same situation. For the Christians who live around Babylon today, around Baghdad, they may feel crushed in the same way. Regathering a people once scattered, re-envisioning people once faced with the pointlessness of life. This is what the vision in Ezekiel is doing. Now, we need to learn from this human experience of exile. One thing that maybe we could learn is maybe in this phrase, I should be over there, but I am here. Maybe you feel in a kind of exile yourself, a job that you believe deep down is you shouldn't be doing. You should be doing something else. Just like Ezekiel felt a long way away from Jerusalem, from the temple where he was supposed to be serving. He felt not where he was meant to be. Now, this is the transforming power of the prophecy. Now that you are in Babylon, you, Ezekiel, you have a role. And I, God, I am calling you as a prophet who is also a priest. Who needs a priest if you haven't got a temple? You need a prophet to revive a people. Maybe you shouldn't think about what you could be doing if you were somewhere else. But be where you are. Prophecy is not prediction, but meaningfulness of where you are and who you are with. A few more examples. We need to learn from this human experience so that the disciples could start making sense of Jesus' death. This is the same story for those who were expecting a Messiah, expecting Jesus to change absolutely everything, to kick the Romans out of their country. They felt crushed and defeated on the Friday when Jesus was crucified. They had the same human experience. And then they understood that it was a new beginning. So we learn to look at the world we see from God's perspective. And that's important. That's what the prophecy does, a renewed vision. Look at it the way God is looking at it. So we can live up to personal renewal. It's not a personal transplant, a personal renewal. It's not becoming someone else, but it's really being your true self. So we know that we can be personally renewed through collective regathering. It's being part of a community, belonging. Belonging matters. It gives you identity, and it must not be conformity, uniformity. All these bones acquire their identity as they get together. Now they have a function, a role, each of them. As people of God, we are called to seek and conform to God's perspective, not conform to a certain model of Christianity. It's a new beginning. It's a new year at dawn. It is time to conclude, but this conclusion is about new beginning for a new year. One, maybe. First thing, do not be contented with assuming that the Bible says whatever. The Bible's a holy book, yes, okay. It's inspired, certainly, yes. Sacred, yes, okay. Remote, 25 centuries old, I'm not sure. It's about the human experience, and that doesn't change. Centuries after centuries, we have the same experiences. The book is full of stories and images that help you rethink your life, like the prophecy of the dry bones in the book of Ezekiel. This is what it's all about. Try to understand their situation, the people in the stories that you read. Try to understand their situation because it is all about human experiences. A prophetic vision is not a bizarre trance with levitation or I don't know what. It's not being out of this world. It's not that. All the prophetic visions I read in the Bible are precisely about this world, how you transform your vision about this world. It can be getting rid of idols. Wrong ways of looking at the Bible, which is wrong ways of looking at the world. So a new year, a time of careful reading and studying, that's something that maybe you should consider. If it is personal, individual, it also have to be collective, embodied in a community with other people, other readers who will give you maybe different insights. That is extremely, extremely rich in itself. Personal reading and collective reading to enrich what you are getting out of it. Maybe for this new year, scheduling personal prayer time, scheduling collective prayer time. Five a day. Five a day is good for fruit and veg, so maybe 5 a day is good for prayer as well. Well, it's only a suggestion. Collective prayer time. If you can, there is this Tuesday powerhouse of prayer at the chapel in Welton, 7:45, collective, coming together. There is also time out with God. If once a month, I think it's on a Saturday, 8 p.m., your house groups also will help with this collective aspect of prayer, coming together, finding your own role in there. Okay. If house group is a new expression and you're not too sure what it's all about, just ask. But joining a house group or making better use of your house group or even renewing the house group you used to go to. That could be interesting. But there's one thing that I want you to bear in mind. Standing alone makes you an easy target. If you're raising an army, standing alone is not the best idea. 2014, we are celebrating the declaration of the First World War, and it's never a good idea to go over the top on your own. You've got absolutely no chance there. So standing alone makes you too easy a target. So, I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them. They came to life and stood up on their feet, a vast army. Now, this is all about illustration. It is a vision. It is, at the end of the day, visual. So, bones with flesh and sinews now, they can move and dance. I am not going to dance. But this is another visual interpretation of bones and muscles and bodies working together, each one with their own specific role in the choreography of life. And that's organization, doesn't it? Isn't it?